T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Back to Dale and Keith, discussing a premature end to the Patriots season.
If the Patriots bring back Cam Newton, it'll be the second worst decision in the history of Bill Belichick, second only to not playing Malcolm Butler.
Wow. On WEEI.
Everything I'm told about the Patriots is that Cam has become the man. Once you let Cam in that locker room, like, Cam's the man. Cam's going to end up signing an extension in New England. They can't let Cam go. Where are you going to get somebody like that? Like, seriously. Yeah, I know they thought 1 yard short. I mean, they're learning about Cam just like Cam's learning about them. I mean, Cam's a legitimate top 10 quarterback in the National Football League.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Fitzy's in the house with us. I know. Well, in Lombardi's defense, that was early on in the season when Wiggy wanted to give him a $120 million contract extension.
No, I know. Admittedly,
it was only $110 million.
Yeah. All right, whatever it was. So yesterday, the Dale and Keith Twitter account put out a tweet. It said, the possibility of Cam Newton returning to the Patriots makes you feel blank. And we had something like 1,100 replies and... most of them
approaching 1,200 right now.
1,200.
It
okay.
took off. It took off. What was your? Did you? Did all of us reply to it? By the way.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. What was yours, Dale? Yeah.
The Rock. The Rock doing the smelly face. You know. Because
something stinks.
I've been off the Cam Newton bandwagon for a long time now. Not as a person. Stress that, but
no,
as a quarterback for the Patriots.
Yeah.
So what we did is we went through and we mentioned it's approaching like 1,200. Responses so far, and probably 1,000 of the 1,200 are negative.
Yeah, it's a lot of GIF and meme reactions, but then people also decided to write out some well-thought responses as well, and I would say it's hard to find positive ones.
Mm-hmm. I'll start, and we'll just bring a couple of them to the table that we liked. I'll start with one from Steve with lots of numbers after his name, which leads me to believe he may or may not be a bot. But he's at least a funny bot because he quotes one of our best sound drops in his tweet.
I'm going to kill myself.
It's aggressive.
He wrote that.
And aggressive. If they sign it, if he re-signs, we're going to be minus one person.
You're going to find me dead.
Not good.
A lot of references to bridges in the response.
Not good.
A couple born bridges I saw.
Bridge here. Jump off the bridge. A lot of
anybody that references one of our sound drops did a good job.
They know what they're doing.
Well, that's why I went right to Steve because he.
I mean, I'd be upset too, but I don't know if I would go that far. Rich Stark 7 said, "I never played football, and I could have done better as a rookie quarterback at 54 years old."
Probably not.
I don't know, but
I like your gumption.
But we don't know. We never got a chance to see him out there, so.
Yeah, my initial, when I saw it yesterday, my initial reply was, I quote tweeted it and said, this tweet supposes that this season actually left me with feelings. looking through so far, I think in the first 100 replies, I've seen 25 of the Michael Scott, no, God, please,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, that's a classic.
That's a classic. There are several, including from your friend from the Dork podcast, your podcast partner extraordinaire, Davey Eyeballs, the dog sitting in hell drinking coffee. It's fine.
It's unbelievable
how many people feel as though this would be the worst decision that Bill Belichick, or as you said in the lead up to this, Rich, the second worst decision in Bill Belichick's history.
Really would be. I mean, this one's obvious. Last year... again, we've talked about it so much that maybe you say, well, they missed calculated, but they really thought Brady was going to come back, and they screwed that up, and then they were kind of left, and then they took the last guy that was available, happened to be a guy in Cam Newton who was an MVP 5 years ago, but he was coming off of an injury. You got him for a song, and you said, hey, let's give it a go, and for three games, it looked all right. But then after watching him for an entire season, you can't tell me that that's possibly the plan, especially this offseason where it sounds like there might be 15 starting caliber quarterbacks moving teams this year.
Half the league. Here's one that I just discovered last night. At JBrownieX3 in reply to the Dale and Keefe tweet, better than watching this Biden town hall.
Ow. There you go. A little political
spin.
What
does that have to do with
a little political spin?
Gary Locke tweeted, you know, the question was, the return of Cam Newton makes you feel like, to which Gary replied, queasy and uneasy, like my tummy will go upsy-daisy.
Wow. That guy said, I think he's used that
nice little poem.
I think he's used that one before. That might be a haiku. Evan had his finger on the pulse. Cam should be traded for Deshaun Watson.
Nailed it.
Deshaun.
Did Scheim write that one in?
No, actually, I went with one of our classic drops. It makes you feel like
pissed off, Angelo.
I love that. Nice, Scheim.
Doug Peterson called back. Yeah.
Scheim, by the way, when I saw this, I wished there was a way that I could have tweeted the drop of you singing I Am Dead Inside from the Monday Night Football theme, because I think that's pretty much what resonated in everyone's head when this tweet went out.
I actually found out that Michael Scott.
I am dead inside.
Michael Scott also says I am dead inside. So we need to acquire
Does
that
he?
And incorporate that in.
Yeah.
Oh, Rich, here's a new GIF. At RyRay86, did the Hubie Halloween riding his Hubie mobile through town projectile vomiting in the streets of Salem?
Yeah, he drank a ton of soup out of his canteen. And
that's what it was.
A lot of soup. All over the street.
There was a lot of throwing up GIFs.
There was. Farts. Pukes.
Please, let me vomit some more.
A lot of that. Hubie Halloween. Good watch. A lot of people did reference a lot of throwing up, a lot of vomiting, it seems like. A lot of that, really.
There were, now, I don't want to make this sound like it was not unanimous. It was not. There were some. I mean, there weren't a lot, but there was some who said, great. Yeah. Prince says, hey, great, I love Cam. We all love Cam. Another one says, go Bills. So
go Bills. They like that
for them too.
Well, the few that I saw that I guess technically were defending Cam were more just the receivers and tight ends were worse, which, they were also horrible. But that's like the one thing that's sort of positive Cam. Like, he wasn't the only problem. It's like, yeah, I know he wasn't the only problem, but it would be a huge problem if you brought him back.
By the way, everybody knows we love Cam, so I would just like to introduce our Cam Newton disclaimer that we will use going forward.
Oh, good.
Cam Newton is an incredible human, and any disdain we express toward him is strictly in reference to his abilities on the football field. We love Cam deeply and wish him well, but we don't want him anywhere near Gillette Stadium.
Nice.
That makes sense. So that we're covered now for the hour, at least.
Here's another random one, and I've actually stumbled across a bunch of positives. Now, I feel like that's the trend now. Like, everybody got their vitriol and their anti-Cam sentiments out early, and now it's starting to trend a little more positive-ish, if you will. Mm. Dustin Hoffmaster. The Hoffmaster. I feel like that's like a nickname for the only Hoff that we all know and love. @D_Hoffmaster. Optimistic. Get the man some help and give him a full offseason. He'll be serviceable to good. Worst case scenario, the floor is only as low as what we saw last year.
Yeah, but I don't want that. I still don't want that.
So, Sean,
8 touchdowns is the floor? Great.
Sean, in answer to our, you know, the return of Cam Newton makes you feel, and he just replied, available on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, a lot of people also mentioned that maybe they won't watch as much. I feel like that's sort of an empty threat. I feel like you'll still watch, but maybe not. This guy wants to stab his eyes out with a fork.
Another one I saw with a dull pencil.
Oof.
There was also a murder committed in our mentions as well.
What?
Former producer of the program, Jason Rossi, said,
good for
the locker room, but I don't think he's a reason to believe he can be a starter, to which John Anderson replied, we asked about Cam, not you as a producer.
Oh,
no. No. The Dale and Keefe account replied. There are many people with access to it. Yeah. However, this one was me.
It was you. So what do you? What's the other disclaimer
Jason Rossi
stuff
came
for?
Back from the dead just so you could kill him again?
Yes,
is
exactly.
That nice? Was that real nice?
Actually, so Dale, one of the most positive replies I saw yesterday actually came from a pal of mine who writes for SB Nation's Pat's Pulpit, the Patriots blog, and he's really one of the best young film breakdown guys. Like, this is a Brian Baldinger in the making right here. At TKyles39, my friend Taylor Kyles, who actually wanted to call in and defend his defense of Cam Newton to the Dalen Keefe reply. Taylor, are you there, buddy?
All right.
I'm here, guys. I don't have my law degree or anything, but I'm going to do my best here. How we doing?
Good, great. Good. I'm all ears. I would love to hear a defense for Cam. What do you got?
All right. Well, the first one, and I feel like this is, I mean, especially recency bias, a lot of the things that people were saying about Cam last year with, you know, how he can't keep the offense on the field, and it's like, what is he doing? All these miscommunications, all these weird throws. A lot of these things are exactly what we were saying last year with Brady. And Brady is significantly older. He's on the TB12 method, obviously. So, you know, he's on like a different astral plane.
Right.
But a lot of the problems that we're seeing are just the fact that the Patriots have a lot of number two, number three options and not enough guys that can really compensate. Now, Edelman was a lot. He's been that person his entire career, but obviously he hasn't been able to stay on the field. Not having Gronkowski at all, you know, when he was even the shell of Gronk that we saw towards the end of his career, obviously he's still dominant when he needs to be, but having that option makes a difference, as we saw in the Super Bowl. You know, Gronkowski didn't catch a pass against the Rams most of the game, but then when you need him, you have somebody who you can go to in big moments. When you look at Cam, especially when you think about like third down situations where the quarterback is exposed, you know, you can't have the little wrinkles like jets, you know, play action and all that. It's just you got to beat the defense however they think they can attack you. If teams decided they wanted to all-out pressure, he didn't have anybody he could throw to who was going to make the play after the catch to get those extra yards. If it was third and long, he didn't have the guy that he can consistently go to downfield. Damir Bird is fast, but teams started to realize late in the season that, one, if you can hit him as he's, you know, about 5 yards in his route, he's going to be out of the progression because it's going to take him a while to recover. He's a small guy. And Jacoby Myers is fantastic. I mean, he is somebody who I think is going to be able to reach his ceiling considering his athletic talent. He's a flexible guy. He's got a little bit of burst out of his cuts, and he's good at creating separation. But at the end of the day, it's still the NFL. So when you're facing guys like Jair Alexander, like Stephon Gilmore, those athletic freaks who are also really smart and know what the route is beforehand, it doesn't really matter how clever of a route runner you are. You have to be able to dominate physically as well. And Jacoby is a very good number two because he does a lot of things well. But physically, you know, he still has his limits. So you have to take into account the fact that the offense was hindered, not only in terms of play calling, but what Cam was actually able to do after the snap. And then one thing that we also don't really get to talk about because it's hard to see on the broadcast version, and I completely understand it's tough watching the game live. I understand the sentiments that a lot of people have. But the offensive line was going through so many rotations. Like, Onwenu was fantastic. But having a rookie play consistent snaps against a lot of really good defensive lines, especially in the AFC East, and then you got Justin Heron, who had to play a lot of snaps. He wasn't really supposed to be anything more than an extra tackle when we were looking at
the season
before.
Yeah, but wasn't their offensive line a lot better than it was the year before? I thought they had a really good offensive
line. Not really, because when you have two – they have a good offense. David Andrews made a lot of difference. Ted Karras did a good job when he was the starting guy instead of Andrews. But that was
the PFF said they had the best O-line in football. I just wonder if – even if they have a guy that Cam can throw to, are you confident that he can actually throw it to him?
Deliver the ball.
I don't think so.
Absolutely. Now, here's the thing. I understand he has a couple doinks a game, and you know, it's not like you can talk around that. But Tom Brady had those too. We don't really talk about it anymore. But Brady also had every now and then that weird pass to the flat. That was what, like, Max Kellerman was using his fuel back in the day. But Cam,
I feel like he had more
balls
batted down at the line than just about anybody. He couldn't hit the short or the deep passes. Like, I don't know. Again, all due respect, I'm not watching the All-22, but I just can't – I don't see a guy that can make throws. I just don't – regardless of who the receivers are. I think he's cooked. I think he's been cooked for a few years.
Well, when you can't really pass the ball downfield, defensive linemen are completely aware of that. You know, these are really smart guys, especially when you're pressuring. They know the ball's got to come out fast. So a lot of those batted passes were the defensive line knowing if we're in a situation where he's got to get the ball, you know, if it's 3rd and 4, 3rd and 6, something like that, there's really no point in rushing him because we can just bat it down and, you know, there's going to be a no play to begin with. Don't waste our time. So in terms of batted passes, that's not all on Cam. That's a lot of good situational awareness from the defense. And it gets lost in the shuffle, and I understand, because if receivers can't make plays on balls, you know, you see so many incompletions and so many drives stalled. it looks like it's all on the quarterback. But I really think we put way too much on Cam. And I know it's an easy thing to, you know, disregard after the whole season and how it went and how differently it was from what we saw with Brady, or even when the offense was struggling, they were still in the playoffs. The defense wasn't doing its job a lot of the time, if we're being very fair. It goes both ways. There were a lot of close games where the defense wasn't able to close it out, considering the offense was in a difficult position to begin with. A lot of times where an offense that wasn't built to pass was exposed because they were in situations that were too close and they just had to get the ball downfield. So there were still a lot of plays that were on the field that Cam was making, but at the end of the day, if you don't punch it in the end zone, obviously it doesn't mean anything. But another important thing that we don't really talk about is how important Cam was with his legs. Like, yeah, their entire red zone offense was Cam Newton. So if you're going to inject a new player in there, you're going to say, okay, are they going to be able to make all these throws? Like, Cam Newton can throw in the red zone. That's not the problem. He didn't have guys that could consistently win in the red zone for chemistry reasons, talent reasons, a whole litany of things. On third down,
they how come they would allow Jared Stidham and his few opportunities to throw fade routes, but they would never let Cam Newton do it?
Like in the Kansas City game, for example. Yeah.
Right.
Because Jared Stidham's not getting a lot of snaps with these guys. Every college quarterback.
So why can't he just hand it off to somebody then? I feel like they know that Cam can't make those throws.
On play calling or anything like that. But also,
yeah, I think Taylor. I just want to get this last thing in.
But I don't buy any of it.
The last thing I want to get in before we got to let you go, because we're up against the commercial break. I think my main concern, and the main concern of a lot of people, Bud, is the fact that it's such a herky jerky throwing motion that he seems to display now. And yeah, there were some nice deep balls over the course of the full season, but he does, like, it's a low delivery that's a low trajectory where the ball comes out. It's a low arm slot. And also, like, he doesn't have touch in the screen game and just dumping the ball off softly in the flat. I just don't know if an offseason and an increase in weaponry or assets around him is going to allow him to suddenly develop the kind of touch you need for the short to intermediate range of the Patriots offense.
Taylor, we appreciate the time and the effort. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
See ya.
Thanks for hopping on, buddy. We'll keep in touch with you. That's at TKyles39. Definitely one of the best film breakdown guys you can follow on a local level. And, of course, he works for at Pat's Pulpit.
Up next, we'll talk to Tim Bontemps of ESPN. He wrote yesterday about the Jason Tatum problems continuing after his COVID-19 diagnosis. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, and it's time to trend.
Dale and Keefe recapping last night's Celtics win.
So Boston goes back to one game over 500, wins this one 112-99.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
Piece came out yesterday afternoon on ESPN.com that made me go, uh-oh. Tim Bontemps wrote it. The headline is Boston Celtics Jason Tatum says he's still feeling the effects of COVID-19. Tim joins us on the Harbor One hotline right now. Hey, Tim, how you doing?
I'm good. I thought when you said, oh, no, Tim Bontemps wrote it, it was that I wrote it.
No, just the message that you were delivering. Not your fault at all. You were the messenger here. I mean, there's so little we know about the long-term effects of young people, athletes, and what's happening with this. Is there some concern? Did you sense concern in his voice about what he's dealing with?
I wouldn't say it was concern. I would say it was more just kind of a matter-of-fact statement of fact, right? That, you know, look, I mean, Jason Tatum's numbers since he came back, despite his minutes being up, are all a little bit down across the board, and he played badly on Sunday, and he just kind of said, you know, yeah, I've been dealing with this for a while, and he did say it's been getting better, and it's something that's kind of gradually gotten better over time. But, I mean, look, we've seen with a bunch of these guys that have come back from COVID, you know, it's a different recovery path for everybody, right? Some people had no issues at all and never tested, you know, never had a symptom and came back and played. You know, Jason said the first couple of days, you know, I remember when he first came back, he said the first couple of days he felt pretty sick and then felt better after that. So, I mean, for Jimmy Butler missed, I think, several weeks when he, you know, I believe tested positive for COVID. So it's just been a different recovery path for everybody. And I think it's just one of these things that we're all going to have to kind of wait and see how everyone kind of adjusts to the new reality of the situation as we move forward here.
Tim, what's your overall assessment of the Celtics? Because when they were 8-3, a lot of us, myself included, thought they were one of the best teams in basketball. And then after a couple of horrible losses, They do get a win last night to get back to one game over 500. Sure, they've had some guys in and out of the lineup, but what team hasn't? So at this point, 27 right. games in, how do you feel about the Celtics?
I guess how I'd say I'd feel is that they're about where I thought they would be, just not in the manner that I thought they would get there, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. If you look at the moves that the Boston Celtics made this offseason, not bringing back Gordon Hayward, coming into the season pretty clearly looking to lean on some of their young players, guys like Peyton Pritchard, Aaron Nesmith, Carson Edwards. You know, they only really signed Jeff Teague and Tristan Thompson as veteran players, right? It felt like this was a season that was going to be about seeing what the young pieces on this team look like and kind of getting an assessment of where the Celtics were going forward. And what changed is that Jaylen Brown came into the season and played like an all-NBA caliber player, right? So all of a sudden you go from having, you know, one certifiable all-star player who's under 25 to two, and all of a sudden that takes your ceiling from being a interesting team to potentially being a championship caliber team again. And then that brings into focus some of the weaknesses across the rest of the roster. And as you pointed out, as Marcus Smart has missed time with Romeo Langford, you know, not playing yet this season because of wrist surgery, with Jason Tatum in and out with COVID, with Kemba Walker coming back from this offseason strengthening program for his knee, you've seen some of that depth, those depth issues that the roster has kind of come to the fore, which is why the Celtics have struggled lately and why they're just a little bit over 500 going into tonight's game.
Yeah, Tim, it's still pretty jarring that Smart and Walker and Tatum and Brown have only played 28 minutes together. So we've heard some other basketball minds.
It's wild, right?
It's nuts. And that's why a lot of people around town who've watched a couple more Celtics game maybe than I have been preaching patience with the team. But a few weeks ago, we had Kendrick Perkins, your ESPN colleague, on, and he said if he could get anyone around the league, his player fix for the Celtics would be J.J. Redick. And we've been knocking around a few other names and maybe some possible trades the first hour and a half of the show. If you could play GM of the Celtics, what move would you make?
Well, no disrespect to Perk, but I don't really think J.J. Redick is doing a lot to solve the issues that the Celtics have. I think if you look at the high leverage playoff series that you need to play in to get to the NBA Finals and win, you need guys that can play at both ends of the court, right? So J.J. Redick at 36, despite the fact he's still a very good shooter, I don't think quite is able to do that at the level that they'd need him to. If I was the GM of the Celtics, if I was Danny Ainge for a day and I had the ability to go get the kind of player that they need to kind of get to the level they hope to, I think they need to get some kind of a combo forward type player. Whether it's, you know, like I was watching this Nets Suns game last night, and Jay mm-hmm. Crowder is not a guy they're going to get. The Suns are good, but like that sort of a player, right? A guy who's a bigger forward who can guard fours, who could space the floor and shoot the three. The high end level of that would be like if the Knicks make Julius Randle available, right? And obviously that would cost a lot in assets to go get, and that's a real swing for the fences type move. But when you look at the Celtics, they've got a lot of centers and they've got a lot of point guard size guys. And then they've got basically their three really good wing players, Smart, Tatum, and Brown on the wing, and that's it. So I think if they're going to make a real run, I think they need to shore up their depth there and add another piece that could create their own shot and, you know, give them some floor spacing and defense at that four spot.
Talking to Tim Bontemps of ESPN, who wrote the piece yesterday about Jason Tatum continuing to suffer some of the effects of having COVID-19. You listed off a number of items that are in play for the Celtics to help explain they may be where you thought they'd be, but they got there in a different way. Can I add to the list and suggest that both Teague and Thompson, the addition of those to the roster, has been a failure so far?
Well, Jeff Teague has been a disaster for sure. Peyton Pritchard, 26th pick in the draft, has, you know, I think pretty clearly wildly outplayed the typical expectations for a guy picked at the end of the first round. I mean, for him to immediately walk into a rotation and be a solid rotation player 2 months into his rookie year, particularly in what's been an insane year where no one really had a preseason or a training camp or summer league, is awfully impressive. So, you know, I think the Celtics have been very fortunate in that he's been able to kind of just immediately take those backup point guard minutes from Teague, who's been bad. I'm going to give Tristan Thompson a little bit of a pass. He didn't play in the bubble because the Cavs obviously were one of the worst teams in the league last year. Then he had a hamstring injury that basically caused him to miss all of training camp. So I think he's needed to get up to speed a little bit, and he's played decently lately. I thought on that West Coast trip, he had two or three games in a row where he had, you know, 14 or 15 points, helped the Celtics beat the Clippers in that game in L.A., played really well in that game. So I think he's going to settle in okay. But his skill set kind of is emblematic of all of the role players on Boston's roster, right? You go through them, whether it's Tristan or Daniel Tice or Grant Williams or even Robert Williams or Peyton Pritchard. These are all guys that are good, like, spot-up shooters and complementary offensive players. And, like, last year, if they were out there with Kemba and Jason and Jalen and Gordon Hayward, right, and you had just had to be one or two guys out there spotting up on the perimeter, then that really fits. But if you're out there with one guy who can create a shot and you have four guys who are really only out there to kind of get a pass on somebody else and make a shot or make a play or make a pass to somebody else, I mean, it just kind of compounds on itself, and then your offense bogs down, right? So that's why, to me, when I look at the Celtics, I don't think they need another catch-and-shoot guy. I think they need somebody who, in addition to be able to guard enough to play in the playoffs, they need somebody else that could create their own shot to take a little bit of a pressure off their main guys to not have to do it all the time.
Well, two guys, and I know that the trade deadline is still, you know, over a month away, but two guys that I think potentially could get traded would be Bradley Beal and John Collins. And do you could the Celtics be involved in either one of those? Do they have enough to get it done? You know, obviously not including Tatum or Brown, to be able to pull off a deal with one of those guys.
I don't think so at this point. You know, if you look at the Celtics assets, like you said, take away the two stars, right? Because you're not trading your under 25 wing players at this point. The Celtics don't have a lot of high end trade assets anymore, really, right? Like, they had that Memphis pick. That ended up being the 14th pick in the draft. They had the Kings pick. That ended up being the 14th pick in the draft, right? Those ended up, those picks were supposed to be top five or seven picks. And if they'd been really any year on either side, they would have been top five or seven picks. Instead, they were not. So, you know, I think if you look at the rest of their roster, they've got, you know, guys like Grant Williams and Peyton Pritchard and Aaron Nesmith and Romeo Langford. Like, these are all, like, okay prospects to put in a trade. But they're not the kind of guys that I think you can expect to go out and get, you know, a star level player or a really interesting young talented player like a John Collins, right? So I think the more of the kind of player that they could get is more in line, I think, with the J.J. Redick type of guy, in that it's either an older player who they could get for cheap, or it's somebody who, you know, they could send out a couple of picks and take into that trade exception created by the Gordon Hayward trade. That then would require them to, you know, basically you're saving a team a bunch of money and giving them something. I think that's where you can maybe get to a point where they can get a good player. But I think it's going to be tough for the Celtics at this point to really get into the high stakes, you know, big name player type conversations, because they just don't have those type of young assets, unless it's one of these trades, kind of like what the Nets did, where you literally trade every draft pick you've got for
right.
6 or 7 years, which I just don't think Danny Ainge, given his track record, is going to be willing to do.
But I kind of wish he would, and I think a lot of Celtics fans would, Tim, because it's such a young team. It's such a young team, and you know that they just continue to hit the same spot on that very soft ceiling that they should be punching through by going to the Eastern Conference Finals and making another run and just coming up a player short. But you referenced the Nets, who did make that trade, and I saw that you were tweeting a good bit about them last night. So my last question is it basically the Nets conference to win, because you think that when they go with their small lineup, there's probably nobody that can keep up with them?
I don't think so, only in that they just literally don't play any defense at all.
None.
And, you know, like, in the second half of that game, it was so notable that they were trying on defense, right? Like, I know they had a couple other guys out, and that was a pretty crazy comeback against a really good Phoenix team. But, I mean, look, they in the first half allowed 64% shooting to Phoenix, and the second half allowed like 49 or 50% and came back and won. Like, even without those guys, they still got Joe Harris, and DeAndre Jordan is a good lob threat at the rim, and James Harden is still an unbelievable offensive player. So they could score with anybody, but they're the 26th ranked defense in the league this season, and they're 27th in the league since the trade. And I just think when you look at their overall makeup, no team in the last 20 years has won with a defense outside the top 11, and only once has it been outside the top 10. So when you look at the numbers that way, this team needs to get significantly better to win. And while I do think their best lineups are when DeAndre Jordan is not on the court because he stinks at this point, I just don't think that they're going to have enough defense to really get by the Bucks. Or even maybe a team like the Celtics then go out and add a piece. And that, like, to get back to what you're saying about Celtics fans wanting to make a trade, I can understand why fans would look at the Eastern Conference right now and say, hey, the Celtics have some really good high-end talent. If they can add one more real piece here over the next couple months, they've got a chance to make a run. And like you said, they've got a bunch of interesting young players and a couple young stars to build around. So, you know, we'll see what happens here over the next couple of weeks.
Tim, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Tim. That is Tim Bontemps from ESPN. Wrote the piece yesterday. He's right that, generally speaking, there's so much we don't know about COVID-19 at this point. And Jason Tatum says he's feeling a little better, certainly better than he did when he first came back from his positive COVID-19 diagnosis. But we don't know what it means a month from now or 6 months from now or a year from now. There's just so much we don't know right now. And I'm sure that those are things that certain members of the Celtics organization stay awake at night thinking about.
I love Tim was also very on, like, I like the fact he kind of speaks Keith, like just saying like, yeah, because they don't play any defense. Just call it, says
they
the guys stink.
The Nets don't play any defense, but they can score like a lot of points.
They're still going to
be a factor. They score so many points.
Fun
that's
watch,
scary
but they're,
lineup. They are fun to watch.
And that was a great stat.
Game.
Like that's all it is. That's exactly, Rich, that's exactly what it is. They play 72 all-star games a season. That's all that those guys play.
Yeah.
But that was really revealing though. That no team basically outside the top 10 in defense ever goes to, like, ever wins the championship.
Yeah,
like, they
said,
would be anomalous if they somehow did.
I saw in SportsCenter the last team that was, like, the worst in the league defensively was, I believe, the two, or that also won the championship, was the 0-1 Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, but they flipped it in the playoffs. Like, all of a sudden in the playoffs, they became a really good defensive team, some way, somehow. I don't know. But they were, in the regular season, they were at the bottom, and so that's what the Nets are trying to do.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. More Celtics reaction with you guys as the win last night perhaps is pumped the brakes a little bit on the disaster talk of yesterday. A little bit later on, Fitzy's Armchair GM's series continues as he looks at defensive backs. That's coming up at 1 o'clock. 617-779-7937. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio WEEI.
The callers love him.
Hey, Keefe, you're a douche.
Then I had to listen to this moron, Keefe, who frankly ought to be fired when he made this statement yesterday.
Co-workers respect him.
It's probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard Keith say, and there's been a lot.
And he always holds himself to a high moral standard.
I did not decapitate a squirrel's head.
I've never wanted to choke anybody, and I want to choke Shine because he doesn't get it.
Back to Dale Arnold and Rich Keefe.
Keefe, kiss my ass. How's that done?
On EEI.
By the way, we'll get to dumb stuff Christian Fourier said a little bit later on in the program, just in response.
We have
perhaps.
Times. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it's only a four-hour show, but...
That's right.
And speaking of which, Dale, somebody in this booth that is not me agrees with what Fourier said that was dumb.
Someone in this booth who's not you. Let me think.
It really narrows it down here.
See if I can figure
you
that out.
You've got to be kidding me. Oh, are we... Guys.
I was actually, and as is often the case, I was listening to OMF at the moment it was actually said.
Thoughts and prayers.
I thought Mutt and Lou were going to expire dead on the spot from laughter.
To be fair, also, I don't fully agree. I just think that they'd be a lot better.
Well, save it then. You're all in or you're all out. All right?
All right, fine. I'm all in.
We're all in. Look at that. Boom. Talk him right into it. He's
in.
Well, it's coming up an hour from now. We will discuss Fourier's hot sports take.
It was.
Because he took a shot at my friend Rich here a moment ago during the promo, and we can't have that.
I'll tell you, what happens is, and Fitzy, you were a part of it for a while, mm-hmm. The Greg Hill Show, they start with their lead. Everybody has to come up with a lead. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. It's a little manufactured, and it ends up being a bit of a hot take tsunami at times. And I feel like Fourier, for some reason, decided to do that yesterday. But again, we'll get to it.
That'll be an hour from now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anything that Chris Bontemps said that concerns you as a Celtics fan, or did it fill you with that much optimism, perhaps?
Well, I think he brings up a good point.
Because he did stress if they can make a move.
Yeah, he brings up a good point that if you want somebody like John Collins, who I want, or Bradley Beal, who I think everybody would love to have.
I wanted J.J. Redick. He was shooting all sorts of holes in that.
Well, yeah. No, but J.J. Redick, you could get. He's just saying right. You might not. He might not really help the team as much as you think that he could. Whereas Collins and Beal would really help, but you can't get them unless you trade all of your first round picks, all of your future first round picks, like three future first round picks and three future pick swaps, which I don't think Danny Ainge would really want to do. But I think I like Fitzy's counter to that is one of the reasons why you don't trade all your picks is because you're hoping to run into the next Jason Tatum or the next Jaylen Brown, or you want these young stars, and that's what the Celtics already have. They have a bunch of young players. They have two young stars. So do they really need all of these picks? And if you can bring in John Collins, and maybe you like him, and maybe you even re-sign him. You know, right now, his problem is he turned down a huge deal with the Hawks. He didn't want to sign early with the Hawks. He's a restricted free agent after next season. You'd have the bird rights and all that stuff. You could sign him if you want him. So I think it can be done, but based on Danny's track record, it seems like you're more likely to get J.J. Redick or, as he kept saying, a Jay Crowder type, which we've had before, and I don't know if that guy necessarily pushes you over the top either.
I don't disagree, though, with his assessment because I don't think we've given it much time here on the program or even around town that somebody who can play both ends, like you need a two-way player. That was pretty solid by Tim. I don't know who that guy is that they're going to get, like you just said, like a Jay Crowder type per se. But why?
That's a good point because like Andre Drummond, sorry to cut you off, but like please. Andre Drummond's a guy that, you know, hey, you bring him in, but last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, he's not playing.
Nope.
You know, and if you're going to be give up a lot to get him or you're paying him a lot, like don't you want him to be a part of that? Whereas I would try to shoot for somebody that could be on the floor at the end of the game. You know, Tatum and Brown and probably Smart. Depending on his health, Kemba, mm-hmm. And then who's the fifth guy that could be on the floor with them to close out games? It was Gordon Hayward. He's gone. So who's available that it could possibly play, you know, in crunch time?
And because you've got enough defensive prowess and ability in Brown and Smart, that could make up for the lack of having a big on the floor or a 7-foot-plus guy at the end of the game. But I appreciate that Tim Bontemps said that knowing Danny, he probably won't. But I think we almost need to get a movement started or just start, you know, like wish it into existence or do like some of our Pat's, you know, Twitter nerd friends do and create a prayer circle and just say like, please, Danny Ainge, please trade the picks.
Now's the time.
You have plenty of youth. You want Pritchard to stick around because he looks great. Neesmith is hopefully your sharpshooter of the future. Brown and Tatum locked up long term. Marcus Smart is still pretty damn young. Like this roster is really young. It's not full of, you know, aging contracts and old veterans who need one last go around. You now have an 8 to 10 year window. Fill it with other talented players who can help get these kids to the promised land, not more Langfords and Edwards.
But if Danny is Danny, which means he doesn't do this, he loves him some draft picks. He collects them like crazy. If Danny is Danny and this is your roster going forward, you probably don't feel great about even getting to another Eastern Conference final, do you?
It's not rocket science.
47-25 and another second round exit.
I was going to say right now you're looking at the fourth seed. So in that second round, you'll be playing whether it be Philly if they are the number one seed or Brooklyn or Milwaukee. Like it's, and even that first round matchup, you'd be playing Indiana as it stands right now. That's not exactly a cakewalk. Mm-mm. So yeah, I mean, if they do nothing, they're a playoff team. But if they can do something, then okay, then they're back as a player in the mix. You know, I think, because again, how many years in a row now have we been saying, well, if they're healthy? It literally started game one with Gordon Hayward. Well, if they're healthy, like they're a pretty good team. Like, what team's healthy? It seems like you're not going to be. Kemba Walker wasn't healthy last year in the bubble. Jason Tatum had to miss games this year because of COVID. Marcus Smart's out for 2 or 3 weeks. I think it's all well and good if your team's healthy, but I don't know. How many times have they been healthy over the last 4 years?
And look, a team that went to the finals last year that gave the Celtics fits all throughout, ultimately eliminating them in six games. Was it six games that the Heat took the Celtics out in?
I forget.
The Heat, yeah. The Heat, they're 11-16 right now. They stink.
They got a real bad start. Yeah,
but they're not going to play like that. I don't think last year's run was anomalous for them. They're not going to play like that. There are going to be more challengers. There's going to be stiffer competition in the eight teams that make the playoffs. The Celtics have For a team full of talent and youth with lots of picks to come, they have glaring needs. Danny should address them as opposed to just continuing to play for that rainy day. You've got the stars. You've got the talent. Make the move.
He talked about the Nets, you know, basically trade all your draft picks. That's just not who he is.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, why do you say that?
He just to basically sit on draft day for like four straight years and not do anything. It would drive
him
nuts.
Well, you can't do it that way. Like
right,
that they've taken that
years,
away from
right.
you. So you can't trade back to back. And so that's why the teams like the Nets with the Celtics or what the Nets did with the Rockets, it's pick swaps.
Right.
So, but that's only if you have a worse record. So I think the hope is, though, you're trading these picks and your team is going to be good. So you're going to be picking late anyway. So the team's not that you're trading with. Like, say you make this big deal with Atlanta. You're going to have a better record than Atlanta. So those pick swaps won't even mean anything. You're still going to have a first-round pick every other year. Plus, there's other trades that maybe you can come up with where you do acquire a pick. Because I just feel like he likes acquiring them because he likes to win trades and he likes to have all these assets. Like, he does like that. But we've also run into draft nights where he has flat-out said, I don't want to take all these picks.
Right.
There was the year they drafted Jaylen Brown. They had two other first-round picks, both international guys that they had to send overseas. They didn't have room for them. So I think given the right scenario, you probably should trade some of these first-round picks. And again, this isn't you have one last year with Garnett and Allen and Pierce, and you know you're going to have to rebuild coming up. There shouldn't be a rebuild for a while. You have Tatum and Brown signed long-term. These first-round picks aren't as valuable. Like, Fitzy's dead on about that.
You are 1,000% right, Rich. Thank you. And this is one of the times where our colleague and craziest mouth at EEI, which is saying a lot given the current roster lineup and lack of central leadership. But Wiggy is in love with and wants Danny to sell out for Karl Anthony Towns. Now, the guy's going to cost a fortune and then some. Okay. Guess what you might also get? You know, Dale, like you were saying, like Danny loves proving himself right. He loves to win the trade. He's in love with having all these picks. I mean, is a duck boat parade, if we're ever allowed to have one of those again, going to be that much more enjoyable because of the contributions of Semi Ojeleye and Grant Williams? Or right. is it going to be better if you trade, you know, a third of the roster and four picks and, you know, mortgage half your future for Karl Anthony Towns and he comes in and averages 21 and 11 a night and you go to the NBA Finals and maybe you give LeBron enough hell to take the title? Why not?
Yeah. And I think we do this with Bill Belichick, and I think you can also do it with Danny Ainge. You know, outside of those years where they got those Nets picks and they were able to get, Smart, Brown, and Tatum, whatever the Nets picks were. Or no, Smart was their own, I think, because they were so bad. But you get the point. When they were picking high, he did pretty well. But when the team is doing well, you're picking 20, 27, 14 at best, but that was also trades. So after Jason Tatum, their first-round picks included Robert Williams, Grant Williams, Romeo Langford, and then Nesmith and Pritchard. I like Pritchard, but you know, like that's the point. Is like those are the sort of the guys that you might be trading away in the future. And if that is going to allow you to acquire another like stud player, like I think you have to do it.
The question is whether can he find a willing trade partner to
right.
offer up said stud player, and B. Mm-hmm. Is he willing to meet the price that said stud player would command?
Because those are the guys, right? I think there might be other names that pop up, but if Bradley Beal, John Collins, and then maybe more of a pipe dream because he is signed, but Karl Anthony Towns, like usually the star players on bad teams,
right?
If they're traded, there's going to be a lot of teams involved. So won't other teams be able to top it? And the Nets kind of surprised me. You know, the Nets, because obviously they weren't going to trade Durant or Irving, how are they going to get Harden? And they pulled it off. I thought the Sixers would have had a better deal, you know, including Ben Simmons. Some teams probably just want all the draft picks. Other teams are probably thinking, well, if you're going to trade off a fringe all-star, like I'll take this guy. Or in Ben Simmons' case, a legit all-star, I'll take him too. Celtics don't have that to offer. Like they don't have the all. Like nobody wants Kemba, and all of their other guys are just kind of unknowns at this point.
Yeah, I would love to know. Yeah, I would love to, Dale. I just want to say I would love to know if Minnesota thinks it's sitting at 7-21 right now, likely looking up for the foreseeable future, if they wouldn't benefit from just getting it raking in maybe two players and a boatload of picks in their continual efforts to try to find some relevance in the ever competitive and difficult Western Conference, or if they think just by having high picks year after year, eventually they can become the Tampa Rays of the NBA and finally just magically get good one year, because they stink every year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The same old story.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. I know we said we were going to get to this at 12:45, but it's too good to pass up. So when we come back, we're going to give you Christian Fourier's hot sports take from yesterday, because I'm not going to have him taking more shots at my friend Rich Keefe about his sports takes. But we're going to give you what Christian had to say, and then we're going to respond to it, because I was listening to OMF when it happened. I think Mutt and Lou have not yet recovered from their laughing bout that they offered up when he offered up this hot sports take. So we'll get to that, and we'll get your response as well. 617-779-7937. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy here on Sports Radio WEEI.